the headlines. Iran says the United States claims that it is fighting Daesh in Syria, and that is only an excuse to plunder the country. Israeli forces shoot and kill another Palestinian in the occupied territories. And Russia says it will deploy tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. Welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisu Misha Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Two U.S. bases in Syria's eastern province of Deir ez-Zor have been targeted in a third such attack on American bases in the Arab country in 3 days. Media reports say rockets were fired towards the bases in Conoco Gas Field and Al Omar Oil Field. The attacks came after the Pentagon said it launched airstrikes on the positions of what it called Iran-linked groups in eastern Syria. It said that was a response to a Thursday drone attack on a U.S. base near Hasaka in northeast Syria. Pentagon said an American contractor was killed in that attack and five American servicemen and another contractor were injured. The U.S. Defense Department claimed the drone used in that attack was of Iranian origin. Washington maintains hundreds of troops in Syria under the declared objective of fighting Daesh terrorists. Damascus, however, says that the troops are occupiers looting its natural resources and helping terrorists. Damascus has condemned U.S. strikes on civilian targets in eastern Syria. The Syrian Foreign Ministry also rejected Washington's claim that its attacks target facilities affiliated to Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Iran has also condemned U.S. attacks on civilian targets in Syria. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the presence of American forces in Syria is against international law and violates the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Kanani says the U.S. claim that it is fighting Daesh terrorists in Syria is just a pretext for pillaging the country's riches. He also dismissed as baseless Washington's claims that Tehran was involved in attacks on the U.S. bases in Syria. Peter Ford is a former British ambassador to Syria. He says American forces are in the Arab country to prevent it from recovering from the ravages of the war.
Frankly, the Americans are not going to leave Syria unless they are put under pressure. And that pressure, if it doesn't work, has to be increased. And that's what's going on. The fact that U.S. servicemen and contractors were killed and injured represents an important and, I think, new development. Until now, casualties have been very light on the American side. But now things are getting serious. And this is particularly important because of the political context in America. We are beginning to hear more and more voices inside America from important politicians calling for the U.S. troops to be withdrawn. The pretext that they are fighting against ISIS is a transparent excuse. They are there to prevent Syria recovering from the conflict. They are there to steal Syria's oil and use that money to finance the U.S. occupation, and they are there to encourage the formation of a breakaway Kurdish independent state. So for all these reasons, the Americans must be kept under pressure if they are to be forced out.
Israeli forces have shot dead another Palestinian amid mounting tensions across the occupied territories. The Palestinian has been identified as 21-year-old Omar Asawad. He was killed in a village in Al-Jalil region in northern Israeli-occupied territories. The regime has ramped up deadly violence against Palestinians in recent months. So far this year, Israeli forces have killed around 90 people, mostly in the occupied West Bank. That is the deadliest start of the year for Palestinians there in more than two decades. Palestinians have also carried out several retaliatory attacks against Israeli targets, killing and injuring regime forces and settlers. And Israeli forces have arrested three Palestinians in a fresh raid in the occupied West Bank. The three were detained after troopers stormed the homes of Palestinians in the refugee camp in the city of Tulkarm. The incursion triggered a firefight with the residents. Israelis have intensified their crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied territories. Regime forces have killed or arrested scores of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank so far this year. Tel Aviv accuses Palestinians of confronting regime forces and settlers, but Palestinians say they are acting in self-defense in the face of Israeli atrocities. Israeli demonstrators have rallied in Tel Aviv for the 12th consecutive week against the controversial judicial overhaul by the far-right cabinet. The rallies have regularly drawn tens of thousands of protesters. Demonstrations erupted in January after the cabinet announced its reforms to limit the Supreme Court's powers. Critics argue that the legal changes will foster corruption and bring about diplomatic isolation. The cabinet, however, says the reforms are necessary to rebalance powers between lawmakers and the judiciary. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to press on with the changes despite mounting criticism. Israel's Attorney General has accused Netanyahu of breaking the law and ignoring conflict of interests arising from his ongoing trial for corruption. Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant has also called for legislation to be repeated, saying that it endangers the occupying regime. The Russian president says Western powers are recruiting allies across the world to build, in his words, a new axis. Vladimir Putin says the alliance is similar to the one created before World War II by the fascist regimes of Germany and Italy and Japan. He also dismissed claims that Russia and China are creating a military alliance. Putin, however, stressed that the two countries enjoy military technical cooperation, and this is no secret. Earlier this week, Putin and Chinese President Xi Jinping pledged closer ties between the two countries at a summit in Moscow. In a statement following the meeting, the two leaders said their relations are not bloc-like, confrontational, or directed at third countries. Russia has struck a deal with neighboring Belarus to station tactical nuclear weapons on its territory. Russia's President Vladimir Putin made the announcement, saying that the move does not violate nuclear non-proliferation agreements. He said Moscow's decision is not unusual, since the U.S. has also deployed its tactical nuclear weapons on the territory of its allies. Putin also warned that his country will deploy depleted uranium ammunition if Kiev receives such munitions from the West. On Tuesday, Britain announced that the Challenger 2 main battle tanks that it plans to send to Ukraine will contain depleted uranium rounds. Moscow warned of a nuclear collision between Russia and the West if the UK goes ahead with this decision. People in France have once again taken to the streets as part of the ongoing protests against the government's unpopular pensions reform. Labor unions have called on the crowds to rally against what they describe as President Macron's scorn and lies. Clashes also broke out between police and protesters in several cities. Police used tear gas to disperse the protesters.
France is in a crisis mode. Police have clashed with protesters angry at President Macron's controversial pension reforms. Unions claimed 3.5 million people turned out across the country, while authorities suggested the figure was much lower at just under 1.1 million. In the capital, Paris, union leaders said that a record 800,000 people took part in the march throughout the city to demand that the government drop the fiercely contested change. Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin said dozens of police officers had been injured and dozens of people were arrested across the country. Earlier, workers blocked access to a terminal at the Charles de Gaulle airport, forcing some travelers to get there on foot. French trade unions have called for fresh nationwide strikes and protests amid growing anger over the government's unpopular pension reforms. Trade unions have blamed the government for, quote, the explosive situation in the country. They also asked workers to continue protesting against President Emmanuel Macron's pension reforms.
For us, 10, 12 years ago, the previous pension reform was already unacceptable. What we want is a retirement age at 60 years old and 55 years old for those with hard-working conditions. And at one point, all these demands have to be expressed on the ground. And if we have to go beyond the demands set by the inter-unions, then this is what we will do.
Train and air travel was disrupted, while teachers were among many professions to walk off the job. Plumes of smoke were seen rising from burning piles of debris, blocking traffic on a highway near Toulouse in southwestern France. And strikes briefly blocked roads in other cities as well. Police also fired tear gas at some protesters in several other cities and used water cannon against others in Rennes in the northwest. Protests against the measures have raged since January.
The only thing he could say to appease the anger would be that he renounces reform, that there won't be any reform, that he respects the fact that the vast majority of the people don't want it, and that he regrets the way it happened. It was, most probably won't be that way, so I think we are in a deep crisis that will linger on for weeks and maybe months.
Lawmakers are saying that they were circumvented by the president when he invoked executive order to get the bill through by decree. The public, meanwhile, claim that they will continue the protests and strikes until their voices are heard. Emmanuel Macron, meanwhile, says either the changes are made to the pension system or it will collapse in the not-too-distant future.
The French President Emmanuel Macron has said the legislation, which his government pushed through the French Parliament without a vote last week, would come into force by year-end, despite escalating tensions. The protests are the most serious challenge to Macron since the Yellow Vest revolt 4 years ago.
We may be at the beginning of a new Gilets Jaunes, Yellow Vest movement, absolutely, because there is no democratic way out. The only thing that could avoid that would be a decision by the Supreme Court, the French Supreme Court, to overrule the law and to, you know, reset the legislative process. It has the power to do this. This is the only hope we have to avoid a major crisis.
Opinion polls show two-thirds of French people are against Macron's pension reform and the decision to push it through without a parliamentary vote. Since December, Macron has suffered a substantial drop of 8 points, and he now sees only 28% satisfied and 70% dissatisfied. Macron's government has shunned Parliament to impose the unpopular pension reforms via a special constitutional power, the so-called Article 49.3, which provides that the government can pass a bill without a vote at the National Assembly, the lower house of Parliament, after a deliberation at a cabinet meeting.
I think this was a denial of democracy. The government passed a law for which a majority of French people were against. The National Assembly was against it. Using the 49.3 is a scornful of French public opinion. Macron was elected with no majority. He was elected against the Front National. We did not give him a mandate to pass these reforms, which are unjust.
Procedure has been used in the past by various governments, but this time is prompting a lot of criticism because of the massive public opposition to the proposed reform. The proposed changes include raising the retirement age from 62 to 64 and increasing the number of years people must make contributions to receive a full state pension. The reforms were at the heart of President Emmanuel Macron's re-election campaign last year, but are proving deeply unpopular. The government insists the reform plan is essential to ensure the French pension system does not run out of money.
So yes, there aren't 100 solutions if we want the pension system to be balanced. it no longer is. And the more we wait, the more it will get worse. And so this reform is necessary. And I say this to the French people, I don't enjoy doing this, I would have preferred not to do this, but it's also because of a sense of responsibility that I express my commitment to do this in front of you.
But many see the changes, such as raising the retirement age, as unfair to people who started working young.
I'm already disadvantaged in terms of my quarterly periods, given my redundancy, given the retirement age, which is being pushed back again and again. I've had a very, very long career. I started at 15, and I feel like I'll never get there.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Here is a part of the speech delivered on March 21, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Nowruz. Today, I will primarily discuss economic matters. Last night, as well, I delivered the New Year's message and I mentioned the slogan of the year. Today, I will explain this further. Of course, there are other matters that I will discuss, God willing, if there is any time left. The reason why I want to discuss economic matters on the first day of the year as the importance of the issue of the economy. If the country truly achieves economic growth based on justice, all other areas of the progress will be activated as well, and the country will make true progress. In other words, the economy plays such a pivotal role. Secondly, in the past decade, in the 1390s, we were faced with a multitude of economic challenges. Well, we should resolve these challenges. We should think, act, and move correctly on the issue of the economy so that the means of comfort will be provided for the nation, God willing. This is why I wish to discuss economic matters.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
National production is the main issue for the officials of the country. The main point in the economy is national production, which I discussed in brief last night. In the past 3-4 years, I have always highlighted production in the slogan of the year. Of course, administrations and officials carried out certain tasks in this regard within the scope of their capabilities and powers. Considering global circumstances, they did whatever they could and made certain efforts, but in my opinion, at the present time, our main issue, the main issue for the executive officials of the country and for those who are involved in the management of the country, is the economy. There are certain new outlook that are encouraging. If these popular outlooks and this presence continues in a satisfactory way, this will be encouraging and there will be more reasons to be hopeful. There's one point here, and that is my discussions and demands are primarily addressed to the officials of the country, primarily the executive branch and to some extent the legislative branch and even the judiciary branch and some affiliated organizations. These discussions are primarily addressed to them. Why do I discuss these matters that are related to them in the public environment, in my public speeches with the people? The reason is that it will be good for the people to become aware of economic matters and policies in the public environment, to know about my demands, and to support and back up the officials who act on these recommendations.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Last September, three explosions targeted the Nord Stream 1 and 2 natural gas pipelines. The blast rendered three of the four lines inoperable and released vast quantities of methane into the Baltic Sea. None of the four pipes are currently operational, bringing the Nord Stream project to an effective standstill. Back then, there were speculations the U.S. may have carried out the sabotage attack. Back then, former Polish Foreign Minister Radoslaw Sikorski thanked the U.S. for damaging the Nord Stream gas pipeline.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again. Then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will. I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
But in February 2023. U.S. investigative journalist Seymour Hersh alleged that the blasts were carried out by the U.S. in a top-secret CIA operation ordered by President Joe Biden, with the collaboration from Norway. Hersh claimed that the U.S. Navy divers operating from a Norwegian ship, using NATO's exercise in June 2022 as cover, had planted mines which were later remotely detonated by a sonar bio dropped from a Norwegian plane.
They set up a committee to think of options. Russia was clearly going to go. The threat the president had yet to make had not been made. And this is December before New Year's Day of the year before, 2021. And the question inside the committee, and it included the usual CIA, NSA, Treasury Department, State Department, you name it. And they met in the secret office building in the across the street from the White House, the executive office building. The option was, do you want us to do something kinetic or something not kinetic? In other words, not kinetic would be more sanctions, or something kinetic would be, you know, taking out the pipeline, as had been thought about.
Following Hearst's revelation, news emerged in several media outlets, including the New York Times and the German newspaper Der Zeit, that pro-Ukrainian group carried out the attack on the Nord Stream pipelines last year. But Hirsch now says the CIA was instructed to come up with a cover story for the Nord Stream bombings that was fed to media outlets. Hirsch says the cover-up story was created to shift blame from the U.S. Hirsch says the CIA was ordered to come up with a cover story after President Biden met with the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Washington on March 3.
Seymour Hirsch, journalist who has been covering this extensively, says this is exactly what happened, that indeed the CIA and German intelligence created this whole hogwash cover story and handed it to the media, double-spaced, you know, just exactly what they wanted you to ingest, and that the media ran with it.
Over a year has passed since the beginning of the war in Ukraine. Since the war began, the U.S. and its Western allies rushed to Ukraine's help and armed it with various types of weapons. They are now inextricably involved in the outcome of the war. In 2022, the U.S. led the way with major support decisions for Ukraine, with EU countries following suit. According to the Institute for the World Economy, adding pledges of nearly 37 billion euros in December, the Americans have earmarked a total of just over 73.1 billion euros for Ukraine's support. For the EU, the comparable figure is 54.9 billion euros. Based on estimates, the ammunition sought by Kiev could cost the bloc some 825 million euros for just 1 month. There are talks of the delivery of depleted uranium to Ukraine. Russia has already warned against such escalations. A report by the World Bank said that it will cost Ukraine $411 billion over the next 10 years to recover and rebuild from the war. Apart from Ukraine, Europe has also been forced to foot the bill. The economy of Europe is also suffering immensely. The European Union's industry chief has said the bloc will have to shift to a wartime economic model if it hopes to meet Kiev's battlefield needs. Europe's heavyweights like Germany are suffering economically. The war and the growing energy prices have cost the German economy about 2.5% of its GDP.
Faced with new and overlapping shocks, we have no choice today but to deal with uncertainty. But the public can be certain about one thing. We will deliver price stability, and bringing inflation back to 2% over the medium term is not negotiable.
While the impact is milder than expected, the country still faces a minor recession. The Biden administration is luring European companies, including German businesses. According to the German-American Chamber of Commerce, around 5,600 of them have invested in the U.S. market as of September 2022. That's an investment volume of almost $650 billion. So the question is, why is Europe risking its economic independence for the benefit of the United States and its businesses?
This was a premeditated terrorist attack on European critical infrastructure. It was also environmental terrorism. Does the EU care? Do you need to know who did it, or do you want to know? Hirsch says the U.S. did it. Did you ask them? Did you ask them, did they do it? Or do you ask them questions anymore? Have we become so subservient? Has the EU become so subservient to US empire that you can't even ask them if they did it?
Israel's far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich has sparked yet another backlash following controversial remarks on Palestinians. The controversial minister has hit the headlines by saying that Palestinian people are an invention of the past century. Smotrich said that there was no such thing as a Palestinian because there is no such thing as the Palestinian people. He said there are no Palestinians because there are no Palestinian people. There are Arabs around who don't like it. So what do? They invent a fictitious people and claim fictitious rights to the land of Israel, only to fight the Zionist movement. Smotrich is part of veteran leader Benjamin Netanyahu's hard right cabinet that took office in December. He made those remarks during a trip to Paris, during a memorial for Jacques Kupfer, an activist for Israel's right-wing Likud party who died in 2021. Smotrich is well known for making inflammatory statements against Palestinians. He's also a staunch opponent of the establishment of a Palestinian state. On March 1st, the racist Israeli minister sparked an international outrage by saying the Palestinian village of Hawara in the West Bank should be wiped out following a rampage by Israeli settlers. Those remarks were so repugnant that even the US, which is Israel's ally, criticized the statements.
In the West Bank town of Hawara, over 400 settlers, backed by Israeli soldiers, torched Palestinian homes, businesses and vehicles, and killed 37-year-old Sama Aktash in what senior IDF commanders have called a pogrom. Israel's finance minister Smotrich, who describes himself as a fascist homophobe, openly said Hawara should be wiped out. Mr. Speaker, such extremism has given license by a lack of international accountability.
The controversial comments have triggered an angry response from Palestinian officials. The Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shatayeh has blasted the remarks as inflammatory. He said the Palestinian land belongs to Palestinian people and Israel is a colonial entity.
The statements made by Israeli Minister Smotrich that there is no Palestinian people and that it was invented in the last 100 years is conclusive proof of the extreme racist Zionist ideology. These inciting statements are consistent with the original Zionist narrative, a land without a people for people without a land, and that the Palestinian lands are disputed, that they are the promised land, and similar such false claims. These statements, for those who wanted to eliminate dialogue expressing the arrogance of power, do not shake our belonging to our land and our history.
Farhan Haq, deputy spokesman for the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, dubbed the minister's remarks completely unhelpful, stressing the Palestinian people obviously exist. The European Union's foreign policy chief also criticized Smotrich's statement.
But I have to deplore this unacceptable comment by Minister Smotrich. It is wrong, it is disrespectful, it is dangerous, it is counterproductive to say these kinds of things in a situation which is already very tense.
It's not widely believed that such controversial comments reveal the racist nature of the Israeli regime. Meanwhile, the Tel Aviv regime sparked another backlash by implementing a controversial policy against Palestinians. The Israeli Knesset has paved the way for settlers' return to 4 settlements in the occupied West Bank by amending a 2005 law that ordered their evacuation. The legislative changes are particularly provocative and counterproductive to efforts to restore some measures of calm as Muslims prepare for the holy month of Ramadan. The U.S. has also said that it's, quote, extremely troubled by the controversial law. Israel is accused of imposing a system of apartheid on Palestinians living in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip, yet it receives at least $3.8 billion of U.S. aid annually. Israel captured the West Bank, including Al-Quds and Gaza, in 1967. Since then, it has been building settlements, housing hundreds of thousands of Israelis on the occupied lands. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law.
The United States has suffered some of its biggest bank failures since 2008. Silicon Valley Bank, the 16th largest bank in the U.S., failed after depositors hurried to withdraw money over concerns of a liquidity crisis. Officials say they acted to protect insured depositors. Regulators have taken control of the lender's deposits and transferred the assets to a newly created entity. Nearly half of the American technology and healthcare companies that went public last year after getting early funding from venture capital firms were Silicon Valley Bank customers. Moreover, a large number of startups will not be able to make payroll at some point in the next month if they cannot access their money. The lender had been under pressure lately due to fears of recession, higher interest rates, and a slowdown in the market for initial public offerings. The factors had made it harder for startups to raise additional cash. But Silicon Valley Bank was not the only U.S. financial institution to fail. Following the collapse of SVB, customers withdrew more than $10 billion in deposits from New York-based Signature Bank. Regulators have now said that Signature was taken over to protect its depositors and the stability of the U.S. financial system. signature had 40 branches, assets of $110.36 billion and deposits of $88.59 billion at the end of 2022. Signature Bank was founded in 2001 as a more business-friendly alternative to the big banks. It expanded to the West Coast and then opened itself to the crypto industry in 2018.
Signature Bank is a business mostly bank with actually pretty good deposits relative to lending. And it closed mainly because I think the same thing we're seeing across the banking industry, sort of a psychology of investors losing faith in the credit quality of banking in general.
And there are a lot of red flags here. That's certainly one of them, the concentration in one industry. The explosive growth over the last year, they literally doubled in size from 100 some odd billion to over 200 billion in assets, catapulting them into one of the largest size echelon of banks in the U.S. They also had a very, as they say in the banking world and accounting, they had a very mismatched portfolio.
The bank failures have sparked fears of contagion in the financial sector, not only in the United States, but also in other countries. Bank shares in the US, Asia, and Europe have slumped following the collapse of SVB and Signature Bank. Investors have started to worry about the general state of the banking sector. Smaller US lenders were particularly hard hit. Investors are concerned that the failures are a sign of troubles at other firms. Several pension funds in the US and at least two overseas have lost millions of dollars due to the crisis. Institutions such as the California Public Employees Retirement Fund, the California State Teachers Retirement System, Korea's National Pension Service, and Sweden's Elective Pension Fund had reportedly invested in SVB. Analysts believe Silicon Valley Bank's collapse is likely to be felt across the technology landscape globally over the coming years.
But, you know, you also have the question of the impact on the financial technology and research and development, you know, venture capital industries in the United States. There's $160 billion potentially tied up in this receivership that the venture capital industry could lose.
Governments in the United Kingdom and the United States have taken extraordinary steps to stop a potential banking crisis. The UK Treasury and the Bank of England have announced that they had facilitated the sale of SVB UK to HSBC, Europe's biggest bank, ensuring the security of £6.7 billion of deposits. President Biden has also pledged stiffer bank regulations, forcing regulators to step in with a series of emergency measures.
Americans can rest assured that our banking system is safe. Your deposits are safe. Let me also assure you, we will not stop at this. We'll do whatever is needed.
The crisis has underscored the risks to banks from the end of easy money. Global borrowing costs have risen as the Federal Reserve lifted U.S. rates by 450 basis points from near zero. The European Central Bank hiked the Eurozone's by 300. There are concerns that price inflation will stay high, something that would drive further rate hikes.
At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
Then U.S. President George W. Bush's 2003 decision to oust Saddam Hussein by force, under the false pretext of WMDs, the U.S. unleashed its war machine on Iraq, and the country and the wider West Asia region would never be the same. The U.S. still contends with the consequences of invading Iraq 20 years ago.
There's not many who would come to the defense of this and think that this was a wise intervention. That, again, I mean, I think mostly because there are two kinds of critiques. One, which is there was no justification for doing it all in the first place, or which is one kind of critique. And the other is that, well, there was a justification, but only if you, you know, were capable of making sure that what came after it was not worse than what happened before. And the combination of the two makes this pretty flawed.
What came after depends on who you ask in the American administrations, past and present. Then U.S. President George Bush Jr. had a rosy assessment.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein was a ruthless dictator. His fate, in some way, was justified. Yet John Bolton believed removing Saddam justified the costs.
I think the removal of Saddam Hussein was an unmitigated plus. There's no doubt that he would have sought weapons of mass destruction once UN inspectors were withdrawn from Iraq and once Iraq was free of UN sanctions. No doubt about it.
But what was not justified was the U.S. forcing its version of democracy on Iraq.
The intervention just raised a lot of questions about two things, which is one, you know, how much was the United States sort of willing to pursue its conception of its own interests at the expense of what was going on in the region, and therefore how much of a good partner was the United States in dealing with challenges in the region. And then second, having done that and having acted unilaterally, in effect, how constant and consistent is the United States? And so both of these things, I think, have diminished our influence in the region. So in that sense, I think you can feel confident saying the net result of this has been bad for U.S. leverage, bad for U.S. influence, bad for our ability to partner with countries in the region to achieve our objectives, including vis-a-vis Iran.
The U.S. invasion of Iraq was the beginning of major unraveling of U.S. policy in West Asia. It also revealed the true colors of a brutal regime. First, the cost of U.S. involvement. Pretty vast. According to a 2020 paper by a co-director of the Cost of War Project at Brown University, the U.S. price tag was nearly $2 trillion. That figure could be as high as $4 trillion. Then the human cost. U.S. soldiers, about 5,000. Iraqi civilians, over 1 million. The U.S. failure in Iraq was on multiple fronts. From the tortures at Iraqi prisons, like Abu Ghraib, which showed the brutality of the U.S. regime, to the waning support from the Iraqi population, the U.S. realized it had to pull out of Iraq.
Today, I can report that, as promised, the rest of our troops in Iraq will come home by the end of the year. After nearly 9 years, America's war in Iraq will be over.
I just decided we didn't want to do this stuff anymore. And that began, to be honest, I mean, that began with President Obama declaring that he was going to pull all forces out of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, another U.S. debacle, the nail in the coffin for a failed U.S. foreign policy.
And by the end of this year, the transition will be complete, and Afghans will take full responsibility for their security, and our combat mission will be over.
We're dealing very well with the Taliban. They're very tough, they're very smart, they're very sharp. But, you know, it's been 19 years, and even they are tired of fighting.
I'm now the fourth United States president to preside over American troop presence in Afghanistan. Two Republicans, two Democrats. I will not pass this responsibility onto a fifth.
Which brings us to today, where the U.S. influence in West Asia has reached a standstill. Nothing could be more evident of that than the recent Iran-Saudi resumption of diplomatic ties. Ironic that the country that the U.S. invaded back in 2003, Iraq, was the one that mediated between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which may lead to the ouster of U.S. troops from the region altogether.
We are with you. What about you?
Meaningful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. This is IRIB English Radio. Welcome back. This is Youth Station. I am Asma, and in here I have Bita with me.
And I'm Bita at your service. Yeah. Again, Youth Station. Assalamu alaikum, dear sister.
Wa alaikum assalam, sister. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Pleasure is mine.
Okay, how are you doing?
It goes well, as usual.
Tells it all.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, you tell me, how's it going?
Well, the usual dramas.
Yeah,
life moves
your
on.
Eyes,
and
your eyes
and
are talking to me.
Yeah. So, they say, if my mouth doesn't say it, my eyes will.
Yeah. And you're that kind of person.
Yeah. So, Bita, the usual thing about the holy month of Ramadan is that when you get close to it, or when you are just entering it,
yeah,
during those days and nights, you start thinking about yourself more and more. Whatever you have done up until now and what you're going to do in the future.
In the future, yeah.
And since we're talking to the youth, and of course we are included.
We are youth.
Yeah. So we would love to know more about how to improve ourselves.
Yeah.
How to be a better youth. How to be, or let me just be more precise, a Muslim youth.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a big difference between the person who has got responsibility and the one who doesn't have.
Yeah.
So, what do you think are the features of a good youth?
Yeah, it's a, you know, general question to answer,
course.
You know, who is good and who is bad. And, you know, the first question, I think, before these two questions is that who is the one who determines which is good and which is bad, mm-hmm. you know? But
who is the one?
Right now, I am the one. I'm kidding.
No, of course,
know,
you know.
We have some set rules and, I don't know, we have the Holy Quran and
exactly,
religion
yeah.
and so on. And we're not going to talk about that. So let's go for the features.
So
that,
you know what I usually think of? When we go through novels and stories mm-hmm. and then they start talking about the bad guy and the good guy. And I always say the same thing. I say, who says who is the good and who is the bad? And then there's this quote that was at the end of one of the novels, which is very beautiful. And it said, who can say who is good in the eyes of God and who is not?
Nice.
You know? Then that becomes so detailed. But the thing has been cleared to us through the Holy Book of Quran and Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam and the narrations that has been passed down to us.
You know, it is always like that. You feel like some sympathy with the people who are relaying.
Yeah.
You know, because they have something in common with you. They're human beings and they make mistakes and
they're more real. Because we all are prone to anger. We all are prone to lying.
Yeah, exactly.
We might, at some occasions, turn out to be cruel people.
Yeah.
So that's why we have sympathies with them. But right now, let's just come back to our youth.
Yeah, I do agree. So I think there are many factors mm-hmm. to determine who is good and who is not. But one of the most important key points here is communication, I think. You know, as a youth, especially Muslim youth, mm-hmm. you have to know how to communicate. We may see many educated people in society that they are, from a high status in social groups and ethnicity, but they don't know how to communicate with other people. This is a problem. Because if you are a good person, you have to show other people that you are a good person. And at the next level, you have to persuade them to be good. You know, mm-hmm. and it needs a good communication. I don't want anyone to try to be the expert in these communications, but we have to try our best.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know whether you are a good communicator or not, But I think I have a lot to do.
Well, you know, I guess we have to elaborate on that more and more. As in general way of saying it, the way you put it, it means that I must be in good relationship with others. Do you mean that?
Yeah, somehow, exactly.
So, well, there might be right now some youth out there who are listening to us.
Yeah.
And they would say, okay, why do I have to have relationship with others?
I told you, because if you have to show your individuality, your personality to other people.
You mean that we must have a good impact on others.
Exactly.
So in that way, as far as, I could have some peace with them, yes, it's okay. But I guess I'm not that extrovert to have too much of relationships.
No, I'm not telling you to make new friendship with other people.
But having a logical relationship and, putting things on a scale, yes, I guess I do try my best. I don't know how successful I have been.
But, it's not about having a lot of people in your, group of social communication.
In your vicinity.
It's about the quality, not quantity.
Of course.
Yeah. So let's go for a short break.
Of course.
And then we're going to come back here.
Yeah. Youth, we are talking about you. This is Youth Station. Okay, Bital.
Yeah.
You mentioned the first point, which was having a good relationship, being in good terms with people.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's the gist. And then, to me, I guess, to be productive, to study too much of books, to educate yourself, to be so knowledgeable, to be so... in touch with the new, with the new knowledge that goes round and round throughout the world, it's the best thing for Muslim youth because that would help them develop their society. And then if the society develops, your country would develop. And then in that way, totally all the people around you are going to benefit.
Yeah.
So educating yourself means that you're going to be a better person. You're going to, be at peace with yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be productive, all in all. That's all I mean.
I understand you. This productivity is something that really matters, especially in youth generation, because we're the generation who's going to build the future of this country, of the society, of the world, And so we are so important. But you have to, be more, a little bit more realistic.
Yeah.
We're youth generation. And this youth generation doesn't want to... I spend time on these sort of things.
Next point I want to mention.
Yeah, I'm aware.
Stop being lazy.
Thank you.
I say it to myself, because I think I'm a lazy person. I usually say if I was not lazy, I would have done too much more things.
Yeah, I know. But, not to being lazy needs a kind of a strong passion. You have
motivation,
to be passionate. Motivation.
You need a driving force. And I guess that must come from the up. Above,
Thank you. But, I think you have to find it around you.
Mm-hmm.
The closer your inspiration is to you, the more you're inspired to do something, the more passionate you are.
Yeah, but sometimes it's very difficult to find it around you.
Yeah, it is difficult. I'm not telling you that it's not difficult.
And some people are not very good in keeping track of these driving forces, I cannot wake up every morning and tell myself that, you're strong. You can do this. You're going to accomplish many things.
No.
Me knowing all the experiences that
the
I've
same
had
way for
and
me.
All the things that I've seen and the road that I've been through. So I don't think that would work for all the people.
No, it won't work for most of the people, I think. I think sometimes there should be some obligations. For example,
this is another point.
Yeah.
Put obligations
Put
for
obligation.
Yourself.
Exactly. I think it will help you to find yourself sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you shouldn't be that free to think.
Exactly.
Or overthink.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. You know, another thing which I think is really important here is confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not talking only about self-confidence, but self-confidence is a kind of major thing that we have to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we lack it so much, especially in youth generation.
And some people have it too much.
I know it. There
Both
is no
of them
balance
are going
here.
To kill, yeah. Yeah.
And I think the people who have it more than usual are so unnerved and annoying.
Of course, yeah. So try to have balance as well.
Yeah. This balance is so important, and this belief in your abilities.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to believe ourselves. You know, stop being lazy or, I don't know, pursue whatever you want to do, being ambitious and so on, I think, has only one key. In this case, the belief in yourself.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I told you. That driving force must come from the skies. There must be a deep connection between you and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, because that is going to help you so much throughout the way. You know, as living, breathing beings, every day is a new turn in our life, and no one knows what is going to happen. Because of this, there might be some situations in which we lose our temper, we might be so sad, we might even cross the road of depression. So going through all of these things, if you don't have that trust and belief in Allah, you're not going to I guess, be successful.
You know what? It's like it is like life is not easy.
Of course, there are
difficulties, ups and downs, and so on. But the problem, I think, at that time is that the speed of these changes is so high that they cannot reach them.
Exactly.
And in this modern world, you have to find a kind of source of peace.
Yeah, and all the problems comes with the modern world.
Yeah, exactly. Technology.
Technology
is a problem because, I don't know.
That laziness we talked about, one of the reasons
from,
for that is just... This technology.
I do agree.
And right now, just I guess we have to go for a break.
Oh, too soon.
Yeah.
Time flies.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We're still on Youth Station, and this is the Finalmon. Yeah, and we're talking about you, all the youth out there.
Yeah, if you're talking about us.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree.
And we've mentioned pretty much a point out there.
Yeah.
Stop procrastinating things. Don't be lazy. If you have something in your mind, go for it.
Yeah, stop delaying and postponing whatever you're
going to
do.
And if you think you lack confidence, you have to develop that in yourself and try to grasp more and more of it, because then it's going to work like an energy that comes from your inside, and then that would help you flourish your future.
And there is something left.
Mm-hmm.
Patience.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, we forget that. We have to be patient sometimes. Sometimes you do your best,
you
run. I don't know, you kill yourself to achieve something, but you can't. And this time, there is something like hikmat and wisdom of God. You have to wait.
Yes, we
there
have
is a gift
to wait,
here.
But we shouldn't.
I'm not talking about that. Stop doing something.
I wanted to mention that. There mustn't be this misunderstanding about being patient
and not doing something,
putting things off.
This is laziness.
Forgetting about them.
Yeah.
You know? Because sometimes in some situations when things get difficult, you stop doing anything just because you say to yourself, okay, I'm being patient. No, this is not being patient. This is not taking any action.
This is exactly like that, because we are searching for a way to run away from all the obstacles, all the problems, and patience is a good excuse.
Yeah. Patience, I guess, means you do your best and then leave the rest to God.
Yeah,
that is patience.
Yeah, and the trust you have in God here in this path is so important.
Does have a great role.
It has.
Yeah.
And I think we have to work on ourselves, me, myself.
More and more, yes.
Yeah, I have a lot to do.
Whatever we say in here, we say it to ourselves at
first. Yeah, exactly.
Because we know youth do not like advice.
Yeah.
The worst advice
I don't like
is
it
advice.
Myself. I'm from the group that I'm so against advisors. Mm. You know, I think I have to experience everything.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter what the consequences. Well. I will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to add it right now, but we have to say bye.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Thank you.
This is just the ending point. It was so pleasurable to be here with you guys. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session from me and Bita, yeah. I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.